When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Hour 2 of Fantasy Sports Today here on Sports Grid. My name is Davis Maddock. I'm joined by George Kurtz. Craig Mish left me this week, but George and I, we've been having a good time. We've been talking some baseball. We've been talking lots of football. Got a little bit of basketball chat in with Brett Levy, our producer. George, we have not mentioned the puck once this whole week. Literally have not discussed it. Is anything happening in the world of hockey right now? Because if there is anything happening, it has not made it to my radar.
Well, you're still getting some free agent signings here, but it's sort of like, if you want to compare it to football, week 3 at the free agency opens. You know, so you're now in late March here, where the big guys are already off the board. You know, so you get some stragglers that didn't sign yet. The Islanders just signed Adam Pelech, which is a guy that, even for fantasy purposes, is meaningless. He's a very good NHL player, very good NHL defenseman, but means nothing as far as fantasy is concerned here. He's not that kind of guy. They're 8 years, $5.75 million, which in hockey is a big deal. So that's what's going on in the NHL. We're still waiting for some trades that might possibly happen. Vladimir Tarasenko is our name that keeps popping up from the St. Louis Blues. We're all wondering where Jack Eichel might end up. That's becoming a sort of a soap opera there. Actually, I should say becoming. It is a soap opera. Jack Eichel is a star in the NHL for the Buffalo Sabres. He wants out of Buffalo. Truth is, everybody wants out of Buffalo there. It's not a very good organization. But he's got a disc problem in his neck. And he wants to have one type of surgery. The team wants to have another type of surgery. So they're fighting about this. And, you know, he wants out. It's a tough deal to make, because the longer they delay this, he's probably not going to be ready to start the season, which in the NHL is just 2 months away before the next season starts here. The NHL is the never-ending season. The offseason is very quick, very short here. So that's really what we're waiting for, Jack Eichel.
There we go, Jack Eichel. All right, so we have our headlines for this afternoon. Full slate of MLB games tonight. Of course, we have our Cubs afternoon game taking place at Wrigley, so that'll mean a 14-game slate kicking off at 7:05 Eastern time. For those of you guys who are still grinding MLB Daily Fantasy on FanDuel, that'll mean a 14-game slate there as well. Joey Votto, 10 home runs over his last 10 games. He's really trying to do the best he can for my NFBC main event team. Of course, we have Joey Votto, we have Joey Gallo, we don't have Shohei Ohtani, sadly enough. The Pelicans sign center Willie Hernan Gomez, and Paris Saint-Germain PSG in talks with Lionel Messi. Sounds like this is probably going to happen. I just saw a report that the football club PSG has booked the Eiffel Tower for a huge event on August 10th. Can only imagine what that means. And George, you make that face. Let me tell you, You think NBA free agency is a big deal. You think NFL free agency is a big deal. You think the NFL draft is a big deal. You think the Super Bowl is a big deal. Lionel Messi moving teams from Barcelona to anywhere else in Europe, this is going to be the biggest cultural event of the summer in Europe. I'm telling you, and in fact, I'll put it to you this way. I bet yesterday you don't follow anyone who cares about soccer. You don't follow any scores, anything like that. But I bet when you went to check social media yesterday, I bet you saw that Lionel Messi moved on from Barcelona.
You're absolutely right on both counts, by the way. I only follow baseball, football, hockey. That's what I like. It's what I enjoy. But I do, for the breaking news for us on Slack, if you check that, Dave, which I'm sure you have access to, you'll see that I posted about Lionel Messi and his contract status yesterday. So I'm up on the news. All right, Mike Cardano, I'm up on the news. I post things about baseball, football, and hockey. Mike doesn't believe in hockey. I don't know why. It bothers me so much that people don't like hockey, by the way. It seems like the perfect American sport. It's fast, there's action, there's violence, yet we like basketball more. We like soccer more. Just bothers me.
Yeah, I mean, look, you do make an interesting point about like what sports people like here in the States. And George, I have another question for you, and I always do this to Craig too, because I'm the young guy at the company, I'm the young guy on TV, I'm the young guy in Slack. So I always ask you guys this: how many times in your life have you heard, "Oh, soccer's taken over. Soccer's going to be the next big thing. It's going to be the biggest sport on TV in America. We're all going to be watching it. It's the most popular, et cetera, et cetera." How many times do you think that has been a public talking point in your lifetime?
Oh, I've heard it a few times. It'll never be for TV. Like I said, we like exciting. We want exciting games. What has football done? Everything's geared towards the passing game because we want to see a 90-point ball game. All right, basketball is the same thing. We want to see a 300-point ball game. It's what everybody wants here. Why baseball? Why are we so angry about baseball the first couple of months? Because there was all the three true outcomes. There was no action. Soccer's pretty much all about no action. But I think it bothers people with all the fake injuries. These guys are going down like they've been shot. Like the sniper got him, from the 13th floor there. So it is what it is. I think soccer is the most popular sport as far as to play because, let's face it, you need a field and a ball you can play. Baseball, you need a bat boy, you need a lot of players. Soccer, you need a couple of guys. A couple of guys, you can play soccer. And you're probably not going to get hurt like you would in football. Hockey, you need equipment. It's expensive. So I do understand why soccer is popular. And listen, I think they're very talented. They're very skilled. And every now and then when I'm at the gym, I'll watch soccer. Well, maybe if I'm on the treadmill or on the bike or whatever it is. But to watch it at home, that's right there with golf, man. That'll put me to sleep.
Yeah, it's funny. Kids in America, we all play soccer. I bet your kids played soccer. I played soccer. We all played soccer, but it just is never that popular on TV. Everyone, please stay tuned. I have some interviews coming up with my friends, Ben Gretsch and Pat Corain. Going to go real deep into fantasy football this year. I think you guys will really enjoy it. See you guys back for Fantasy Reality in a few moments.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
My name is David Smatic, and I am joined this segment by my friend, Ben Gretsch. You can follow him on Twitter, at Yards Per Gretsch. And I really wanted to bring Ben onto the program because you've probably heard this phrase, the running back dead zone, and you'd think, wow, whoever invented that phrase, probably a really smart guy, probably really intelligent, you know, very well researched. And you would absolutely be right, because the guy who put pen to the paper to describe the running back dead zone was our friend Ben. And so first off, Ben, thank you for hopping on with us. But then please give us an explanation to what the running back dead zone actually is.
Yeah, sure. I mean, in PPR leagues, really, at any point in the draft, wide receivers are going to, on average, tend to score more points than running backs because running backs bust at a high rate. But at the very beginning of the draft, that gap is pretty close, and you can definitely chase high volume, high upside running backs in the first couple of rounds. And certainly in the later rounds, that gap is close as well. In the middle rounds is where there's this really huge gap. And over a long period of time, we look at long-term trends. Running backs are just really rough picks. And about the late part of round three or round four, back towards the late single-digit rounds, maybe round seven, round eight, it's not really a specific round range as much as we get into some pretty questionable running backs that are pushed up by projected volume, which is something that we don't see actually play out over the course of the full season, where these guys actually maintain these really, you know, these projected roles. And that's also a really prime spot where wide receiver is still deep with some really high upside guys. So that gap becomes really large, and it can really sink your team to be drafting too many running backs in those early middle rounds.
Right. And, you know, kind of the way that people think about it is that taking the running back is safe and taking the wide receiver is risky. And they think about that for two reasons. One, volume is a little bit less projectable for wide receivers than it is for running backs, at least from a surface level before the season starts. And then two, just due to the way that wide receivers accumulate points, you're going to have a random week where Julio Jones gets 4 points, where Cooper Kupp has 6 points, and even Josh Jacobs in a bad season might have a floor of like 8 points or something. And that feels different, even though in the end, you're going to have way more, you know, spiked weeks from the wide receiver. And so it's kind of a trick of the brain where people tend to not realize, you know, fantasy football is a weekly game, essentially. And I would assume a lot of the running back, you know, taking Josh Jacobs, taking David Montgomery, taking Najee Harris really early in drafts, part of it is kind of the fallacy of not understanding that it is a weekly game.
Yeah, one of the big things that I see as sort of a criticism of maybe like zero RB strategies or the running back dead zone generally is this idea that running backs are more valuable. No one who's saying not to take a lot of running backs early is saying that running backs aren't valuable. When you hit on an elite running back, you have the best player in fantasy. Like, we all acknowledge that. I will readily acknowledge that. They're very, very valuable. The question is, where do we get that production from in drafts? And how consistently, when we pick players in certain ranges of the drafts, do we return value? And so you said like projectable volume, it's a little easy to project on at the running back position. I would say that's very much true on a weekly level in DFS when we know what the roles are. Talk about a season level, it's a little bit harder, I think, because the role can disappear right away. There's one running back typically in most offenses, some have two, but the ones that we're targeting, obviously, for fantasy are the offenses that really feature one running back. Wide receiver, if we miss on a projected, you know, target share, we're missing by just a few percentage points. Those guys aren't, their value is not absolutely cratering. They're actually the much safer pick. The high-end wide receivers were much better over a long period of time at identifying the wide receivers that are going to be really good, target-dominant players. And a running back, especially outside maybe the top 15 or 20 that we collectively are drafting in the first couple of rounds and collectively ranking high, and I think there's this wisdom of the crowds element, we know who the stars are. We know Christian McCaffrey and Saquon Barkley and Jonathan Taylor, and even go back to Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and those are guys that we know are very likely to be the lead backs in their offenses. Once you get back to guys like Josh Jacobs and those guys that you just mentioned, there's question marks, and there's a reason that drafters aren't willing to really commit to them. And at that point, that's the profile of the type of player that just winds up not returning good value for your fantasy team.
For sure. And every year, and this is why people keep drafting in the dead zone, every year there will be a David Montgomery. Every year there will be a 2019 Aaron Jones. And it will happen every single year. There will be a running back drafted from rounds 2 to round 7 who ends up being a league-winning running back. Actually, technically, it was kind of Dalvin Cook last year. I mean, Dalvin Cook was routinely a second round pick last year, which people forget about given how incredible he was. So let's dip our toes into the dead zone. There are, for me, three guys who I feel very comfortable taking in that range. The first is Clyde Edwards-Helaire. In a normal person leagues, a normie league, you can get him in the third round. That's not as true in high stakes manager leagues and things like that. Also, Travis Etienne, I know that you like him as well. He feels like he fits this mold to a T, going to be better in the second half of the season, going to catch passes, going to get high value touches, all of those things. And then also Daryl Henderson. I mean, I truly think that if we brain wiped everyone right now, what is the stupid alien movie? I can't even think about it, with Will Smith, where they have the pen. If we brainwiped everyone, Men in Black, if we Men in Blacked everyone right now and restarted doing fantasy drafts, I think Daryl Henderson would literally go in the first round. So I am all over him.
Yeah, probably at least the second round. I agree with that, actually, because the Rams offense has been so fruitful for running back production. The thing I will say about the dead zone, that there's a little bit of a misconception, is it doesn't mean you can't take anyone. It's just a low probability bet. The running backs that have succeeded out of the dead zone, though, over a long timeline, have tended to be younger players, players that we don't actually know quite yet how good they are, which is why they're not getting pushed up into the top few rounds. And the biggest way that I think about it is that the reason the dead zone exists is because of these dubious lead backs that we are pushing up because of projected volume. So the guys to avoid would be like the Mike Davises. You're only really drafting him in that range because you think there's no competition there, but he doesn't have this great long-term profile. The guys you can target there are the guys that are only really being pushed down to that point because we're concerned about if they're going to get enough work, but everything else is very positive. Their skill is very positive. All of those things all point in the right direction, and those are typically young players. Travis Etienne's a great example. First round pick, new regime took him. Yes, they have an incumbent in James Robinson that the fantasy community loves from last year, obviously. But him, Javonte Williams, and you mentioned some others, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, DeAndre Swift, guys that maybe we're just not as sure about being, or I should say, we're not as, we're pushing them down because we're concerned about their actual role. But they certainly have the ability from a talent perspective, if they get that role, to be absolute smashes.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, when we talk about talent and ability, obviously we're talking about things like, I expect Travis Etienne to have a lot more long runs than James Robinson. I expect Javonte Williams to look more shifty in the open field or whatever than Melvin Gordon. You know, Melvin Gordon's going to take a lot of 15-yard gains and turn them into 6-yard gains. Like, I feel confident about those things. But we're also talking about catching passes, which I get the sense kind of over the years, it people don't like it. They don't like the idea that a running back has to catch passes to be really good in fantasy. But Derrick Henry had this absurd season last year, over 2,000 rushing yards. He had like the most rushing attempts since 2012, the most rushing yards since 2014, the most rushing touchdowns since 2015. All of these things, they were all true, and he didn't even crest 20 fantasy points per game in PPR leagues. And you tell someone that, and they like instinctively are like, well, that can't, you know, that's not right. But it's just the name of the game. And a guy who catches a bunch of 5-yard dump-offs, Ezekiel Elliott, catching dump-offs just ends up being a little bit more valuable. Everyone, that was the running back dead zone. Of course, follow Ben on Twitter at @yardsperGretch. We are going to go ahead and run into break here real quick on Fantasy Sports Today. I will be rejoined on the other side of break by George Kurtz. Everyone stay tuned to Sports Grid TV.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com. We'll be right back.
back into Fantasy Sports Today here on Sports Grid TV. I'm Davis Maddock, joined by my buddy Pat Crain from NBC Sports Edge to talk about, honestly, something that it's not a ton of fun to talk about these late round tight ends, or maybe it's sort of fun in August, but then we get to December and we look back at all the tight ends we're drafting and we're like, oh, I just picked up Jordan Akins off of the waiver wire to cover because Tyler Higbee didn't pan out. You know, kind of the story of the tight end position in the NFL is actually tight ends are earning less targets than ever because teams are playing third wide receivers more than ever. We have basically seen teams use a third wide receiver and a fourth wide receiver more than at any other point. The spread offense from college has, you know, fully infected NFL head coaches and offensive coordinators. And our friend Rich Rebar actually has made this point. But running backs have been earning more targets as well over the last several years, which has, of course, meant less targets for tight ends. So we have a real have or have nots at the position, right? So we in FFPC scoring, which is tight end premium, Travis Kelce and Darren Waller both go in the first round. George Kittle is a middle of the second round pick. Lots of people are very optimistic on Kyle Pitts and TJ Hawkinson. And then there is some leftover optimism for Mark Andrews as a touchdown scorer. And then there really is just a giant tier break. People are throwing darts, of course, on Noah Fant. And then to me, after Noah Fant, the position becomes a morass, Pat. I know people like Dallas Goedert. I don't understand why people like Logan Thomas. I truly may have not drafted Logan Thomas yet this season. What are your holistic thoughts at the tight end position before we talk about some of the later round guys?
My overall thoughts is that, you know, the tight end position, I think, arguably is like the hardest position in football because you're essentially being asked to be an offensive lineman and then also be a wide receiver, two highly skilled positions that aren't very similar. And the guys who can pull this off, like a Travis Kelce, like a George Kittle, Darren Waller, are super rare. There's just not many humans who can very effectively play both of those roles. And I think that's why we see, you know, the top guys priced up so much, and that we tend to see the top tight ends in fantasy and in real life repeat year after year because they do have a huge skill edge over their competition. You know, Rob and Graham have these long stints atop the fantasy ADP. And I think we'll see that with a George Kittle, for example. I think we'll see George Kittle be, you know, a top three fantasy tight end for the next 4 or 5 years. So after that, we're looking for guys who we think can emerge into that group. You mentioned, you know, Andrews, Hawkinson, Pitts. They all have good chances, but yet have not really shown it to date that they're truly in that elite tier. And then once you get past them, we're really kind of hoping and Logan Thomas is a great example because we don't really have any reason to believe that he can actually be a hyper-efficient receiver at the position. Last year, he was propped up on a ton of volume. I think that volume could evaporate a bit with, you know, Curtis Samuel being added if he can get back to, you know, he struggled with injuries through camp. But if he's healthy, that could pose a major problem. And we also have a quarterback change where maybe they're going downfield a little bit more instead of kind of dump-offs and checkdowns. And you're getting, you know, into this tier, I think, that starts with Thomas, but that is quite deep of guys who are probably fine, but aren't very likely to emerge as elite options. And so my general feeling is that I want to keep the cost low, because if I'm taking one of these guys who's probably not going to emerge as that next superstar tight end, then I'm really hoping the situation ends up being more favorable than we think right now, or that they run really hot on touchdowns, like we saw with Robert Tonyan last year. So, you know, it's essentially a little bit of luck. And so I don't want to be paying up if I'm really just hoping to get lucky.
I mean, yeah, like that definitely is, I think, probably the right way. I think that definitely is probably the right way to view it, that the position is so much related to luck. And specifically touchdown variants, like Robert Tonyan last year, touchdown variants. Irv Smith Jr. had some good games last year as a streamer. Irv Smith Jr. is actually where I wanted to
start our conversation, because there was some bullishness or some bearishness on him earlier this offseason. Mike Zimmer talking about, you know, Tyler Conklin as a breakout or whatever. I think that's a great example of a coach just straight up lying, because the team has a lot of draft capital invested in Irv Smith Jr. He's been effective as a receiver when targeted. Now, his targets per snap, his targets per route run are not great, but I would anticipate him being used in the right part of the field. And I think there's an obvious spot where he benefits, which is Adam Thielen not scoring 9 touchdowns from inside the 5-yard line again. I think that would just so obviously be an area of the field. And Irv Smith Jr. kind of fits this profile of guys we like anyways, right? Got on the field young, high draft capital, kind of broke out, at least was on the field as a younger player. So I feel like Irv Smith Jr. actually is being a little bit underdrafted right now. Like, I have huge concerns about Mike Gesicki's playing time in Miami. I would much rather have Irv Smith Jr. than him. And honestly, I would rather have Irv Smith Jr. than Logan Thomas, who goes far ahead of him in drafts right now.
Yeah, I think Irv Smith has, last year people were excited about him, and it was just too soon. And honestly, I think it still might be too soon. I think generally with these tight ends, they break out like past when we think they will, or they kind of break out randomly. Like Logan Thomas was not someone that anyone was excited about. And so I do think that like both of these guys are probably a little bit too expensive. I've actually gone with Gesicki more so because I'm actually not all that worried about his playing time. He played alongside, even though he played in the slot a fair amount, he also shared the field with a slot receiver. So the Dolphins, to some extent, were using like 4 wide receiver sets with Gesicki as that 4th wide receiver. So I think he'll probably be okay, even with the addition of Jalen Waddle seeing a lot of slot snaps. I think Gesicki will have plenty of routes run, and he was a little bit more efficient than Irv Smith was last year in terms of yards per out run. And that's something that Gesicki really struggled with his first 2 years. So seeing that improve for him, I think we could, I don't think he'll have a huge breakout, but I think he could be part of an improving Miami offense and really benefit if Tua takes a big leap forward, where, you know, Kirk Cousins is probably who Kirk Cousins is. But you're all right about the touchdowns available. Irv Smith could end up just kind of running hot in a Tunyon-esque way and get into the end zone a bunch. So I think he's fine. I guess I would just not, I don't see a huge distinction between him and Gesicki.
Yeah. So the guy I think I am most, this actually, I don't even think, I know, the guy I am most bullish on as a late round tight end, it's definitely Gerald Everett. We have seen tight ends perform well for stretches in Seattle before, but they've always ended up sharing time with someone else. Or, you know, Disley getting injured, you know, Greg Olsen, a million years old, et cetera, et cetera. Like we have all seen these things play out, right? But there's not real competition for Everett at this point. I think he's clearly the best tight end on the roster. Russell Wilson is saying, you know, nothing but complimentary things about him. Everett, a good run blocker. That's going to endear him to Pete Carroll. That's going to keep him on the field. And you and I both kind of like Dwayne Eskridge, but there's not really a clear third target in that passing game. And even if the Seahawks become more run heavy, like they're talking about, you and I have already talked about, well, maybe they're more run heavy, but they're more effective when they throw more play action and things like that. I do think there's kind of a Tunyon-esque season there for Everett with like 83 total targets, 60 receptions, but like 9 touchdowns just because of how efficient Russell Wilson is. So I am super bullish on Gerald Everett.
I like Gerald Everett a lot, and I like his price. I think he's well-priced, usually going kind of in the back end of this tier, a tier that I would also include Logan Thomas in, of guys who I don't think are that great but aren't bad, and we're kind of hoping the situation breaks in the right way. Playing under the pass coordinator for the Rams now as the Seahawks OC, some continuity there for Everett, even though he's changing teams. And this offense, I do think, could be pretty exciting. I think that Everett can play. I think that Tyler Higbee can play. And I think they were both kind of cannibalizing each other for the last 2-3 years. Now with both of them separated, I think Higbee is actually one of the few guys in that kind of earlier part of the range of this tier that I am interested in, because something significant has changed. We might see him unlocked a little bit in terms of the targets he can get. But then Everett, I like even more because he's way cheaper and he's part of an offense that could be just as explosive, maybe even more explosive, depending on how much they, you know, decide to pass ultimately. So I think Everett is kind of the gem of this tier, partly because no one seems to agree, and he goes at the very end of it.
Yeah. All right, rapid fire. Who scores more points, Hunter Henry, Jonnu Smith? Very early on in camp, sounds like no edge between the two. I actually was reading Patriots practice reports trying to mine some like target information, and they both had 7 targets the first day of scrimmage. So it's just like, it's total gut, but your gut. Which way do you go, Hunter Henry, Jonnu Smith?
My gut is Henry because I think he'll play more snaps. A more traditional role, probably will just be out there a little bit more, gives him more opportunity for touchdowns.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I think Hunter Henry is the more natural 80% of snaps guy, but I think Jonnu is the more athletic guy, which could lead to him being a little bit more efficient. So hard to say. I drafted a little bit of both of them, but that will wrap up our discussion on the later round tight ends. We are going to go ahead and run to break here real quick on Fantasy Sports Today. Everyone, stay tuned to Sports Grid. We'll be back soon with George Kurtz running into fantasy or reality in the Sports Grid 60.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Fantasy Sports Today here on Sports Grid TV. My name is Davis Maddock. I'm joined by George Kurtz. We have Fantasy or Reality coming up, but need to tell you guys to make sure to be following Sports Grid and Sports Grid TV on Twitter. You can get all the latest updates, breaking news, line changes, stay on the grid all day long, getting informed with all the odds, analysis, getting our best bets, our fantasy sports positions, everything that you guys need. Follow at Sports Grid and at Sports Grid TV on Twitter. George, while we were on break there, some news just broke. Josh Allen, quarterback of the Buffalo Bills, just signed his Mahomesian-level contract, 6 years, $248 million with $150 million guaranteed, even if he goes out tomorrow, gets hit by a car, and breaks his leg. Big, big deal for Josh Allen. Do you think this is a good deal for Josh Allen? Do you think this is a good deal for the Bills? How do you see this contract breaking out?
I mean, I think it's good for all around, yeah. We don't know the exact structure of it, what it's going to come down to. That's always what matters here. But I think he's going to see a big chunk of this, $150 million guaranteed, $43 million a year, which is pretty much what the AAV breaks down to. I just let you know, quarterbacks get paid. You know, Dallas played that game with Dak where they, you know, played the franchise game. They didn't want to pay him. You know, the price only goes up. It's not going higher, especially with these new TV deals. Once they kick in, quarterbacks are going to make their money. They'll be long before they're making over $50 million a year. So, yeah, I think it's probably fair. I understand the tracker's going to tell you, well, he only had one good year. But you know what? You don't have long to wait. You can't wait until he's the eighth year in the league and he's had 4 good years in a row. It's not the way this system works. You got to make up your mind right away here. You don't want to franchise the guy that kills your cap. So I think the Bills did what they have to do. I think Allen got paid what he thinks he's worth, and hard to argue with it right now. I think it's probably going to end up being a deal both sides are happy with.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I think in the end, I don't think it will end up being a deal that hampers the Bills. I don't think that it will be a deal that they regret. But I don't know if it's like the most value for money contract in the history of professional football. And certainly, Josh Allen is going to be happy about counting those millions of dollars. Now is about that time when we bring in our producer, Brett Levy, to play a little game here on Fantasy Sports Today that we call Fantasy or Reality. We have three pretty good ones coming for you guys today. Brett, what do we have first up?
All right, Davis. Well, our first Fantasy or Reality, we're going to the baseball diamond. You guys have been giving my Mets a tough time all week, but the lead has finally shrunk to half a game after over 100 days in first place. So we got to ask, George, we'll start with you. There will be a new leader in the NL East tomorrow. George, is this a fantasy or reality?
Sorry, Brett, this is a reality. You know, and I'll say this again, the Phillies are not a good team. There's nobody in this division that's a good team for different reasons for all these teams. Atlanta, a lot of injuries. Mets have had their share of injuries as well. I'm sure things would be a little different if DeGrom was healthy all year, but he's been banged up, and he's still out now until at least another 3-4 weeks. We'll see if he pitches again this season. I'm going to go yes. Phillies, they're feeling it. They're playing well. Listen, they're playing nobodies. I get it. You beat Washington, a team that really it's a minor league team outside of Juan Soto. I understand that, but you're winning the games you need to win. Mets are playing a minor league team too, and the Miami Marlins, they lost 3 out of 4. I think it's going to be a good pitching matchup tonight with Stroman and Gibson here. I think it's going to be a lower scoring game, maybe even a battle of the bullpens, which scares me on both sides, by the way, especially if you're betting totals in this game as far as the over-under. But yes, I think it's a reality. There will be a new top position in the National League East starting tomorrow. And let's also not forget, by the way, the Atlanta Braves are only a game and a half out. This is going to be a fun race in September. They're all bad, but it'll still be a fun race to watch these teams.
It will be a fun race. I mean, of course, the only reason this was in here so that we could give Brett a little bit of a hard time. But yeah, there is going to be a new leader in the NL East. When we log on the show on Monday, Brett's not going to be able to say, oh, the Mets have been in first place for, 105 days or whatever. I actually saw an amazing stat about the Mets. They have only four pitcher wins. Since the beginning of June, right? I mean, they are really getting by with paper clips and duct tape there in the NL East. The Philadelphia Phillies, I mean, look, they added Kyle Gibson. It's not like this is an arms race out there in the Northeast right now, but I got to think that this is a reality. I think that the Phillies will win this game tonight, and I think that the Phillies will probably end up winning this series, and Mets fans are going to be cursing the name of Steve Cohen, saying, why didn't you trade for someone? Why is Javi Baez the best that you could do for us? We're the fans of this great team. You couldn't do better than Javi Baez for us. Brett, I know you got to be asking for more than Javi Baez.
I don't know. I was pretty excited we got Javi Baez. A pretty exciting bat, generates some offense. But yeah, need some pitching help. We'll see what happens, though. I have faith in the Mets. We'll get through the weekend in first place. But we're going to go to the NFL because Lamar Jackson has not practiced in 2 weeks. He tested positive for COVID-19 in late July. He's, I guess, unvaccinated, and it's held him out of training camp for a while. So, Davis, we got to ask. We'll start with you for this one. You are concerned about Lamar Jackson missing training camp. Davis, is this a fantasy or reality?
So I'm not really worried about Lamar Jackson heading into year 4 with this team, same head coach, same everything around him, right? I mean, they added in Rashad Bateman. They added in Sammy Watkins. But I don't think this is a situation where they're going to get to week 1 and Lamar isn't going to know the plays or things like that. But I am concerned. So I'm not concerned about the play on the field. But what I am concerned about is all of these quarterbacks who are missing training camp, right? Kirk Cousins missing training camp. Lamar Jackson missing training camp. Lamar is in the COVID protocols, tested positive for COVID, and he was out getting his hair done this week. He posted on his Instagram story he was out getting his hair done. Like, what I am worried about with Lamar Jackson and Kirk Cousins and these guys is that they're not taking their responsibility as team leaders seriously enough, which I never say things like that. I am never like, you know, you're the quarterback, you got to set an example. Like, you know, that's not really my style of analysis. But I am worried that Lamar Jackson is going to have to miss regular season games, right? So the protocols are far more strict if you're not vaccinated. You have to stay on the COVID-19 list for longer. The close contact rules are more strenuous. So what I'm worried about with these quarterbacks who are not vaccinated and who are missing training camp is that it's going to mess up my fantasy teams. Like, what are we doing here? I can't have my round five Lamar Jackson best ball teams ruined because this guy's not in camp. Like, I can't have this, George. So I'm not concerned for his play on the field, but I am concerned about the fact that he's missing training camp. I'm worried that he is going to be missing regular season games for the same reason.
I actually have Lamar Jackson as my starting quarterback in an earlier league that we drafted. The value, I think he lasted round five, so I took him there. Unusual for me to do something like that, as I'm not big on taking quarterbacks early because it's just so deep. And that was a one quarterback start league, not a super flex, not a QB2 league. So it is what it is with Jackson. Now, the good news is this. He's been activated from the reserve COVID list today. All right, so he'll be back at practice tomorrow. It's still August 6th, he'll be back August 7th. So he'll be practicing for another 5 weeks before week one starts. So I'm not all that worried about this. That being said, I do worry about other things you brought up here. You know, the fact that he's, you know, team leader stuff. We heard Kirk Cousins say this yesterday, right? Another guy who's got issues with the vaccine. I got to be a team leader. I'm going to have, plexiglass walls around my desk in team meetings. Okay, yeah, that's nice of you. Maybe just get the vaccine, it solves the problem. I'd like to see Mike Zimmer call his bluff on that and make him get that, you know, and say, okay, here it is. Here's your plexiglass. Now you're going to sit in this little cubicle here. So it is what it is. Like I said, coaches lie. That's what they do to us. When their lips move, they're lying to us. They're never telling us the truth. We've learned this with Dak already. Remember, Dak was day-to-day. Now he's more week-to-week. You know, Jackson missing time does hurt because we're waiting for him to take that next step as a passer. Does it hurt him running? No. He's a natural running skill, one of the best in the game here. But it hurts his progression as a passer, and that's what we're waiting for him to take that next step to be able to throw the football. Sort of what Josh Allen did last year, whether it'll be a true, maybe unstoppable threat here. So this is our reality. I'm worried. Yes, I think you have to worry at this point, but he will be back tomorrow. I think in 2 weeks from now, we will have forgotten all about that he was on the COVID-19 list.
All right. Well, our last question, it's actually not really about you guys. It's more about your significant others. But Dan Levy, Eugene Levy's son, is writing a book on the everyone's favorite series, Schitt's Creek, excuse me. And I got to ask, because this is a very popular show. Davis, we'll start with you because George has probably never heard of it. Your significant other will read the Schitt's Creek book. Davis, is this a fantasy or reality?
So I actually did watch this show with my significant other. She liked it. She watched all of them. I did not, I did not sit down and watch all of them, but like, it's a good show. It's funny. The characters are endearing. The writing is very good. Like it's a good show. Now, in terms of the two of us who reads more books, I am more of the reader in our family. What this will be is I'm going to end up getting her this book as a gift. I hope it's out by Christmas time. That'll be a good gift. It'll sit on the shelf. Maybe she'll read it. Maybe she won't. I would say she did like the show enough. She thought they were all pretty funny. You know what? I'm going to go ahead and say reality. At least this book will end up in our household, and someone will have the opportunity to read it. So I'm going to go slight reality.
All right. Now, I have seen Schitt's Creek, okay? I have seen it. My wife and I also just finished watching it maybe 2-3 weeks ago. So we did binge the show. I thought it was okay at best. You know, really, it's not – I lost kind of interest after the first couple of episodes. It wasn't my kind of thing. But we agreed we'd watch it together, so I watched it. Maybe I was doing other things in the room at the same time. Dan Levy, by the way, I think steals the show. He's funny. You know, not that anybody wasn't funny, but I thought he was the best person in the show here. As for reading the book, This is a fantasy. There's no way, no way on God's green earth my wife is going to read a book about Schitt's Creek. That I can guarantee you. As for me, you know, I read a lot. But the only book I've read probably in the past couple of decades is that one you see over my right shoulder there, Bulls by Greg Nettles, which I've read a few times as it came out in the 80s. I read the Bronx Zoo, the Dallas Cowboys books in the 90s with Jimmy Johnson and the crew there. Not a big reader of books either here. And I think it's safe to say, outside of kids' books, that the only book that's in the house that's a true book would be Bulls by Greg Nettles.
There we go. Yeah. Brett, what about you? Did you watch Schitt's Creek and did you like it? And is your lady friend going to watch or read the book?
So she actually texted me from the other room since we're working at home. She's not going to read the book, but she does enjoy the show. She watches a lot. I have watched many an episode when I have come in to the bedroom late at night and it is on TV. So I don't watch the show religiously, but I've definitely seen more than my fair share.
Joe, or George, what is your favorite TV show of all time? What show do you like so much that you actually would read a book about?
Shield, 24, Sons of Anarchy, Rescue Me, any of those.
All right, everyone. We're going to go ahead and run into break here real quick. See you guys in a few moments for the Sports Grid 60.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Everyone, and welcome to our final segment here on Fantasy Sports Today on Sports Grid TV. Ending our week, myself and George Kurtz have been here with you for most of the week. Craig on a beach enjoying himself, having the time of his life dealing with that Florida weather, no doubt. Of course, we are to the time of the show where we have our Sports Grid 60. So, George, the floor is yours. What do you got for us?
You know, I complained earlier this week about building the bookcase, right? How tough that was, pulling the curtain back a little bit. I'll pull it back further for you. Do the show from home, right? And I'm the kind of guy, I tell my family, I live with my wife, two kids, dog. Dog doesn't listen to me anyway. But I'm always telling them, listen, I got a show today, 12 to 2. 12 to show today, 4 to 8. Whatever it might be, tell them over and over again so they know, so they can prepare. This is the main floor of the house here. The kitchen's behind me. So if you want to get something to eat, do it before the show. And it's amazing how many times this will happen here. All right? No one will come down all morning or all night, whatever it is. I won't see anybody down here for hours upon hours. But as soon as the show starts, oh, someone wants a drink of water. Someone wants to use the microwave. Someone wants to use whatever it is. It drives me insane. It's like, oh, I didn't know you were doing a show. I told you 18 times. It's hanging on the calendar right there. You can see it. I said, I tell everybody everything so I don't run into these problems. Okay, I know we all have issues at home. Today's great. I don't know where anybody is in my house other than the dog. Wife's gone. Who knows where? The kids are at Splish Splash. They're having a good time. No one's home. But it's amazing how often I'll run into this problem, especially I can't wait till Sunday afternoon when I'm on from 12 to 4. I'm sure there'll be lots of aggravations.
You know, Murphy's Law, whatever can go wrong will go wrong. Everyone, as we head into the weekend, I just have one thought on fantasy football draft season as we get there, which is there's always an injury optimist in your fantasy football league. Someone who thinks, ah, you know, Michael Thomas, he's not going to be out that long. Saquon Barkley's a superhuman. He's not going to miss any time. Kenny Galladay's got a hurt hamstring, but he's a great athlete. You know, Kenny Galladay, he'll be fine. Something I have come to learn over my years in fantasy football is to never be that guy. Never be the injury optimist in your Fantasy Football League. Everyone, thank you so much for watching Fantasy Sports Today over the course of the week. Of course, stay tuned to Sports Grid for the rest of the day and the rest of your weekend. Thanks to Brett. Thanks to everyone over at LTN. Have a nice weekend, everybody.